afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Monday. Get you through this crisis. In a world where few things are reliable, we are reliable. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. We are live on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. Got a lot to get to. Only have 2 hours left to do it. We turn to a Seattle neighborhood where now an animal is racist. We're going to get into that. A basketball player decided to not take a knee, and now he's being called a hero. He's being called brave. We're going to get into that. Plus, Keith Swank is running to take on Kim Schreier, but first, he has to take on Jesse Jensen, the Republican who's running up against him in Washington's 8th District. Huge district. A district that should be red. Keith Swank is going to make the case later on this hour. This hour, by the way, of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage, PRMI. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So, the Finney Ridge neighborhood in Seattle, they've got a neighborhood association like so many others do. And they've decided to wage into the world of culture and social justice. And they decided to cancel their annual LED light monkeys display. Because everything is now racist, including monkeys. We've got a new segment we're going to start doing on this show, exploring how literally now everything is racist. And so we start with monkeys. Now, for the last 5 winters, they put up these monkeys that are lit up. It's LED lights. And these businesses would put them up in their storefronts because everyone thought it was cute and fun. And so someone complained. One person, according to this report from our sister station, Cairo, a single complaint, said that by choosing monkeys, the association did not take into account the long history of monkeys being used as a racist symbol. And as a result of this one single complaint, an absurd complaint, the business group voted to permanently retire the monkey lights. John Jones is the director of the Finney Ridge Neighborhood Association. He's told the Dory Monson Show on her sister station, Car Radio.
Hearing that perspective,
We
were unable to do anything but to act. And that is what puts us on the path of trying to be anti-racist,
trying to learn and
grow and act appropriately.
Okay. He doesn't see this as them caving in to one crazy person with a crazy position. To him, no, this is a legitimate person, and that person's concern, particularly when it's presented by someone who's a person of color, is legitimate.
I wouldn't call it caving in. I would call it that our responsibility as white people in a society that has inherited white racism.
We have
to listen to voices of color that come to us.
Okay, you have to listen to voices of color that come to you, even when they're not speaking in a rational or reasonable way. Now, none of what he just said means anything. Yes, it's got a lot of buzzwords, anti-racist, all the buzzwords. Cool, thank you. You've read the handbook on how to be a compassionate progressive. And you can tell in his voice that he kind of feels ashamed of a past that he has nothing to do with. I believe this guy is a good person. I believe he's a good person. He's not a particularly intelligent person in this particular case, but he's a good person. But he has been convinced that whenever anyone who's a person of color has a position on anything, he as a white person is not supposed to listen to it and say, okay, I understand, but I disagree. He comes off as someone who, no matter what, you have to kowtow to the person of color who's telling you something. That if a gay person were to come up and say this, you have to agree with it. That if a Jewish person comes up to you and says one thing, you have to agree with it because you are simply a cisgendered white dude. Monkeys are not racist. It's been used in racist imagery. That's true. That part's true. With context, it's been used as racist. But a monkey is not racist. There's nothing about this monkey display, the lights, that any reasonable, rational person would look at and say, oh, well, that's racist. I can't believe none of you saw this before. Unbelievable. Should we round up all the monkeys at the Woodland Park Zoo? Are there any primates at Point Defiance? Do they have that? Should we just round them up and just all kill them? Because it's race. These are racist animals. Kill the monkeys.
No, don't do that.
No, sorry. I'm told they're racist.
That
what are we supposed
mean
to do
you
with
kill them?
What are we supposed to do with them?
You.
Where do we put them?
Look, I'm not the right. I'm not the person.
I can't recycle
who's
them like I'm recycling the lights. So what am I supposed to do with the monkeys at the park?
Why do you think I have the answer?
Someone's got to.
Well, I don't.
This is just so ridiculous. And what I love about this, it's not so much that we come back and respond to this and say, that's nutty. It's always pushed, well, you know, it's good to have this conversation.
Understanding that this was going to cause a conversation.
Uh-huh.
And being happy that it causes a conversation because it allows us all to look at something that seems innocuous and really
innocuous,
examine
you mean, not
the
innocuous
effect that it has that we as white people might not see.
Oh, we're not having a conversation about the appropriateness of a complaint. We are having a conversation about your reaction to a ridiculous complaint. You didn't have a conversation. In a perfect world, someone comes forward and says, you know what? This monkey display is racist. Here's why. Your reaction to that is not immediately to say, oh, well, you're right. And I, as a white person, have nothing to say about it, so I'm not going to push back. Let's take it down. No, the response should be, okay, let's have a bigger conversation in our association group. Because someone says something is offensive does not make it so. Does not make it actually offensive. Someone says something's homophobic doesn't mean it's homophobic. Someone says something is anti-Semitic doesn't make it anti-Semitic. Being reasonable and thoughtful does not mean saying yes to every hypersensitive person who comes forward and claims to be a victim of something. Now, when I look at the Finney Ridge Business Association, they've got membership fees that cost between $100 and $400. Is that systemic racism? What about the businesses that are minority-owned that have historically been kept out of organizations like this? The whole idea of an association, I would argue, is racist. Because, you know, before, when there were associations in communities, black businesses couldn't join because of systemic racism. Should we not then get rid of this entire thing? Using the same logic, someone came forward and complained about a monkey, a literal monkey that was of LED light. Just inherently having that monkey display is racist. Okay, well then having an institution that has historically kept black businesses out, that's more racist. So why don't you guys just disband? Why don't you guys just disband? Now, I imagine they'd come back and say, well, that's a little crazy. I mean, you're right, it is crazy. That's my point. That's my point. That we're not feeling comfortable, regardless of the conversation, to say, well, you know what? You're going a little bit too far. That's problematic, to borrow the left's terms. That's problematic. I hear the conversation around Black Lives Matter and some athletes, and we'll talk about it a little bit later in this segment. Some folks saying, you know what? I've had to have some really tough conversations about race. Conversations about race. This was not a conversation. This was a reaction to one person. Did you consult any other people of color? Did you go around and have an honest conversation about this issue, or did you just react? Because you were terrified of what it would say about you if you didn't. Well, kudos. Now we're having a conversation, John. But we're not having the conversation that we could have had. We're having the conversation about how insane you are for reacting this way. And you make a mockery of legitimate issues of racism. If this is racist, everything is racist. If everything is racist, then nothing is racist. You're going to have to pick and choose what we're going to call racist or white supremacist or homophobic or anti-Semitic or Islamophobic, whatever it is. Not everything can qualify. Because if everything qualifies, then nothing qualifies. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So landlords in Washington state are getting hit really, really hard by the coronavirus eviction mandate, which means you can't kick someone out who can't pay their rent due to the coronavirus through no fault of their own in a lot of these cases, in most of these cases. But of course, it also makes it harder for the landlords to pay their bills on the property that you're renting out. And it's one of those parts of this conversation that no one seems to be having. 97% of the conversation about this is specifically tailored towards the people who can't pay their rent. But what about the people who have bills to pay that rely on that rent payment so so they can pay their own mortgage, so they can pay the energy costs, so they can pay the handyman who they hired to fix the window just last week that you complained about being broken. Brandon Leyritz is a landlord out in Auburn, and he told Como TV he's been struggling himself because of this moratorium.
Really, the last payment I received from them was in January. And at that point, they were thousands and thousands of dollars past due.
January. That means he's gone without a rental payment for 8 months. Is that fair to this landlord? Are we going to blame the coronavirus for a dude who in January couldn't pay their rent? When the coronavirus didn't hit here hard until the end of February, early to mid-March? Now, Como says that on average, only 9% of rent goes into a landlord's pocket. I want you to think about that for a second. As you pay that $2,000 a month or $1,100 a month, whatever it is you're paying, only 9% of that on average is seen as profit. The rest goes into the mortgage, goes into repairs, goes into property taxes, insurance, and all the other expenses that these landlords take on. I know folks like Shama Sawan in Seattle want to pretend that all landlords are evil and greedy. They're all millionaires and billionaires. They're not. Oftentimes, these are people who own just this one piece of property. They oftentimes live on the property with you. They're your neighbor. This isn't easy for them.
I had to move out of the unit I was living in and rent that out so I can get some income.
Is that fair to him? Governor Jay Inslee, with your eviction moratorium, is that fair to him? Are you offering him any help? Are you speaking to any of the concerns that he raises? You're not. And that was one of his points to Como.
It's creating a really tough situation because we're kind of the untold story.
The untold story. We've been talking about this untold story for months. But Jay Inslee doesn't want to have that conversation because it's so much easier to get some social currency, some extra special points during the coronavirus crisis, claiming that you care deeply about the people who can't pay their rent. Due, by the way, to policies that you've put in place, closing down businesses, kicking them out of jobs, cutting down on their hours. That's why they can't pay their rent. Another landlord is Amy. She said she was forced to take a second job when her tenant, who, by the way, works, stopped paying, taking advantage of the situation.
I shouldn't have to work two full-time jobs to support two households because of an eviction ban that was put in play.
She's 100% correct. We have an election. Tomorrow, primaries due. Your ballots are due. People have said how upset they are with the direction the state is going, and the polling seems to indicate that a lot of people, regardless of their political position, doesn't like the direction that the state is headed. And some of you have been fighting. Your activism has been to not wear a mask. Your activism should be focused on the results tomorrow because you get to pick one of the Republicans to take on Jay Inslee. And lots of people have emailed me over the course of the last week or sent me tweets saying, hey, who should I vote for? I do not endorse during primaries, especially in a case where I literally did two debate moderations of all the candidates who are running or the top five candidates. So I don't want to face accusations that I was unfair. So I'm not going to endorse. But I can tell you this. You have three, maybe four, who I think have a legitimate shot at beating Jay Inslee. Joshua Fried, Lauren Culp, Tim Iman, Raul Garcia, slash maybe Phil Fortunato, depends. But of that group, you've got someone who is competitive against Jay Inslee. Vote for the one that you're going to feel the most confident about. But understand, whoever ends up winning, one of them can defeat Jay Inslee. If you do not like these policies, if you think it's absurd what we've done, then make sure you're putting all of your attention where it needs to go. Because Jay Inslee comes out, he clarified his rules on reopening parts of the economy, or the pause, I suppose we should say, on parts of the economy. He clarified his rules on reopening taverns, breweries, wineries, and distilleries for indoor service. Now he says that if there's a reasonable number of food items on the menu, whatever that even means, I don't know what reasonable number means, but they say on Como TV, sandwiches, salad, soup, pizza, hamburgers, or substantial appetizers, then you can, in fact, open to in-person eating. at the breweries and the taverns and the wineries and the distilleries. They still are prohibiting bar area seating. The update includes further guidance on overnight group summer camps as well. In phase 2 and 3, summer camps are not allowed to operate with individual campers. Members of a single household can sleep in a cabin with a maximum of 10 people. All meals must be eaten outdoors. And he's going to go, Jay Inslee, to your campsite, and he's going to personally inspect and ask for IDs. Although you can't ask for IDs because that's racist. So he's just going to look at you and be like, you don't look like you're related. And then if you don't look like you're related, or like in the case of Peyton, you're going to go camping next week. Probably in violation of these rules. He's going to come to your site, and he's going to look at your girlfriend and say, there's no way she's dating you. You clearly are not in this. Get out of here. And they're going to kick you out.
That makes sense. I mean, lots of people say that. And they're like, Peyton, she's so far out of your league. What's your deal?
I say that literally all the time when I see you on Instagram.
I know. Everyone says it. And so Jay Inslee's going to come and say it. And I'm going to say, sir, you have no right to be here. I'm going to ask you to leave. And then he's going to order a hot dog at a restaurant.
Yes. Jay Inslee is the type of person who looks like he goes to a fancy restaurant, orders a hot dog with ketchup. Just ketchup.
And
the side, by the way, he dips the hot dog with the bun into the ketchup. He doesn't even put it on top.
And I'll deny him because you're not supposed to put ketchup on hot dogs. Mustard, relish, onions. That's how it should go.
100%. The IRS is increasing the number of officers in Washington State, and if you owe money, they're going to come for you. Don't try to take on the IRS yourself. Contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So over the weekend, there were a bunch of sporting events in various leagues, from the NHL to the MLB to the NBA.
To golf.
But
MLS.
Golf, hold on. Golf doesn't normally have pregame festivities.
Yeah, but you were just saying that there's a lot of sports.
Okay.
I'm helping you out with all the sports.
I'm just saying as a setup, because more players took a knee. In fact, the vast majority of them took a knee.
Many players.
Almost all of them. Almost all. A select few decided not to. For various reasons. Some of them for the right reason, which is, it just seems disrespectful. There's no reason for me to take a knee during the national anthem. Jonathan Isaac was one of those people. He decided to refuse to take a knee. He stood. He still wore a Black Lives Matter shirt. But he refused to take a knee. And he was rewarded for his bravery by blowing out his knee this past weekend, and now he's not going to play for a very long time.
Yeah, that's rough. He just had the same injury too last season. Poor just guy. Came back, and then boom.
But before that, before hurting himself, he explained why he chose to stand during the national anthem.
I believe that Black Lives Matter. A lot went into my decision, and part of it is, first off, is my thought that, you know, kneeling or wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt don't go hand in hand with supporting Black Lives.
Yep.
And so I felt like, just me personally, and what it is that I believe in, standing on a stance that I do believe that Black Lives Matter. But
you said that.
I just felt like it was a decision that I had to make.
And you said that twice.
I didn't.
Okay.
You know, feel like putting that shirt on and kneeling went hand in hand with.
No, you said that.
Supporting Black Lives, or that it
now
made
you're just
me
yourself.
Support Black Lives or not. I believe that for myself, my life has been supported through the gospel.
There you go.
Jesus Christ, and that everyone is made in the image of God, and that we all fall short of God's glory. And that, you know, each and every one of us, each and every day, do things that we shouldn't do. We say things that we shouldn't say.
Okay.
We hate and we dislike people that we shouldn't hate and dislike. And sometimes it gets into a point where we point fingers about whose evil is worse. And sometimes it comes down to simply whose evil is worse.
Okay, and then he goes on rambling for another 45 seconds. But the point is, he decided to stay up. It is not controversial to stand for the anthem. Everyone needs to understand that. It is not controversial now, nor was it controversial during the days of Colin Kaepernick to stand up during the national anthem. It has been normalized to take a knee right now during the national anthem, normalized simply because so many athletes have chosen to do it. But it doesn't mean it's controversial to stand. That is the correct way to do it. You can choose not to do it. I would argue it's disrespectful. You have that right, as does everybody else, to judge you for being a jerk for taking a knee during the national anthem. As I said before, politics should stay completely out of sports. But if you're going to inject your politics into the sporting events, well, then I hope you understand that there are going to be some consequences to that. people are going to call you out. Now, maybe not inside your little bubble within the NBA, and I do think the NBA is a little bit different culturally from the MLS or MLB or NHL. All of them are going to be handled a little bit differently, but I do think there's going to be some long-term consequences to this kind of behavior, more so on the football front. Now, other people decided to stand. Myers Leonard of the NBA, he's what, the Heat? He decided not to take a knee.
Good job. You got his team right.
Yeah, I put it in my notes.
Okay.
Brent Bernanke is a ref because the referees have also been taking a knee. He said, no, I'm going to stand. Greg Popovich, I know him. He's the coach for the Spurs. He decided to stand as well as Becky Hammon, the assistant coach, stood for the anthem. Sam Coonrod, the pitcher for the Giants, stood. He was the only player to stand ahead of that game. And just for your edification, Rachel Hill from the Chicago Red Stars.
Nice. Good job. Way to work that in there.
Women's soccer.
NWSL.
Yep. She decided not to take a knee. And she, by the way, she stood because her family is a military family. But my favorite is from the NFL, even though they haven't quite started yet. Stephon Tuitt? T-U-I-T-T? Him?
Tuitt.
Yeah, him from the Pittsburgh Steelers. He said he has no plans to take a knee. He tweeted, the Star-Spangled Banner, blah, 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 blah. I'm not kneeling for the flag and screw anybody who have a problem with that. My grandmother was an immigrant from the Caribbean and worked her butt off to bring 20 people over the right way. She had no money and educated herself to be a nurse. She's living good now. He's not taking a knee. Good for him. Good for all of them. All the players who decide to take a knee. The refs, I don't care either way, if I'm being honest. I don't know any of their names. The only names of referees I know are the ones who suck. So I shouldn't know their names anyway. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. When we come back, we're going to dive into the big local right here on KTTH.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the big local on the Jason Rancho. Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the big local. Here's how this works. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. They don't spend all that much time talking about the issues in your neighborhoods. So we ignore Seattle and we focus all of our time on the cities you live in, work in, care about most. And we start in Maple Valley, or at least with a Maple Valley teen who went missing last Friday. She has been found alive. 18-year-old Gia Fiuta was found over the weekend on Saturday by a search and rescue team that was sent out to look for her. Here's Sergeant Ryan Abbott with King County Sheriff's Office talking with our sister station, Cairo Radio.
Gia was found 1.2 miles from where her car was parked. We obviously don't think she took that direct route. However, where she was at was up a very steep ravine in a heavily wooded, thick brush area.
Up a steep ravine. Which is interesting. She ran out of gas. Seems that she wandered away from her car and ended up just getting pretty lost.
In the next couple of days, we're hoping to meet up with her and try to get an idea of exactly how she got out that far and just to double check that there wasn't any foul play involved. We do not believe that that's the case at this point. We think that she just got really lost.
She got really lost. Good news was her car was found by detectives last Saturday between Skycomish and Stevens Pass, and it gave them a general idea as to where she might be.
She definitely ran out of gas. We believe that she then tried to walk towards the gas station. The nearest gas station was about 10 miles, and I don't think she was aware of how far it was. So we think from there it's very possible that for some reason, and we don't know why yet, she went into the woods and then kind of got turned around and just ended up going further and further away from her vehicle and the road.
I am so suspicious, without any reason to be.
Don't be.
Not of some nefarious intent, even
though I
do tend to think that maybe she hung out with a boyfriend and then they pretended all. But I'm kidding, sort of. Doesn't some of this just not make sense to you? So if you're on a road.
Yes.
Okay? You run out of gas.
Okay.
Okay. So you follow me so far?
I'm with you.
Okay. The road goes somewhere and came from somewhere.
Correct.
Okay. Would you not stay on the road? It's possible. Now, first I thought that maybe she fell. And she went down a hill and she couldn't get back up. But he said she went up a ravine, not down one. So why did she get off of the road, even if she's walking and walking? It's like, oh my God, I didn't realize how far this is. Maybe it's really hot or really whatever. Why would you not stay on the road?
I don't know. She got hungry.
Is that not suspicious to anyone else?
I read that she ate berries and she drank water from a stream. So maybe she was hungry and thirsty and needed to divert from the road to get essential nutrients.
But why not stay in your car? Where presumably someone's going to drive by.
She's like 18.
And 10 miles, by the way. 18 years old. 10 miles is not that far.
She's known her entire life to not trust strangers. You know, stranger danger. That's still a big thing. I'm sure an 18-year-old girl doesn't want to be on the side of a highway flagging down random cars. Saying, help me, I broke down. Because then she is just instantly screwed if anything happens.
Oh my gosh.
It's a dangerous world out there, Jason.
Okay. None of this is questionable to you. Not even a little bit. Again, okay. Not that she did something wrong, but it feels like we're missing a part of this story.
I don't feel that way. Call me naive, but I'm...
You're naive.
I'm trusting the story that is coming from the search and rescue crew and her.
Well, it's not coming from the search and rescue crew. She's the one who's making the claims, and she hasn't yet spoken to the cops. She was found, which, by the way, how's this for just crazy coincidence? This was the last day of the search.
We're down to pretty much our last day or so of searching. We just ran out of volunteers. We had no more. Search and rescue was amazing. I mean, this is 7 days of searching, and we had search and rescue. They're volunteers, and they came from all over the state to help us look for Gia.
Well, I do, man. I mean, she was only 1.2 miles away. Could have just probably found her a little
earlier. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you volunteer for search and rescue?
I didn't know this was happening until Friday.
Where have you been?
Had
this
I known,
all over social
I would have
media.
Been the first person out there.
Liar.
I would have.
You don't volunteer for anything.
I would volunteer in a heartbeat.
Name
for that.
One thing that you've ever volunteered for that hasn't been told or asked of you to do by management. And you say, oh, I'll volunteer. That's a lot of silence coming from over there.
Well, I'm thinking because there's so much.
Nope, there's not a single thing. You can't name one thing.
2 years ago,
700 days.
A coworker brought in their dog.
Okay.
And I agreed to walk with her to the Starbucks with the dog.
So you got Starbucks out of it.
Yeah, but I volunteered to go with her with the dog, knowing that the dog was going to poop. And you know how I feel about that.
Did you clean the...
No. I was just there.
So what did you do?
I said, ew, pick that up quickly before someone shames you.
How is that volunteering and not just going on a walk with a friend?
I didn't have to do it. I could have walked on the other side. Okay. You're going to be all picky. Armed thieves drove a truck through the front of the Issaquah Costco, stole a bunch of jewelry, although we don't know exactly how much they stole. It happened yesterday. Commander Chris Wilson of the Issaquah PD.
We received a call about 6:30 in the morning where a vehicle was driven through the entrance of Costco.
Boo. Three thieves jump out. They fired shots into the jewelry case, and they grabbed whatever it was that they could.
As they were leaving, they encountered an employee who was coming to see what the commotion was, and one of the suspects pointed their gun at the Costco employee, told them to just leave the area, which they did.
Yeah, good news. That's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to fight back. I know there's some people who have this need to push back to save what? Jewelry from Costco? No, not worth getting into a fight or dying over. So the employee ends up leaving, and the thieves drive off. Good news was, no one was injured in what happened yesterday.
According to the employee, they were covered up pretty well, I guess you'd say. They were covered in the clothing that wouldn't reveal their race, gender, anything like that.
So the witness basically didn't have much to add other than it was three individuals. Let's be clear, they were dudes, right? They're probably dudes.
That's so sexist of you, Jason, to just assume like that.
They were dudes.
Yeah, they're dudes.
I mean, are you really dressed so covered in so much that you can't tell if it's a dude? Or maybe it's just politically incorrect to say. Kind of carried himself like a dude. Or Z carried Z-self like a... It's a non-gender person. How about that? Can't get me in trouble for that, can you, Costco HR?
Very fortunate. We do recognize that though, these type of incidents, regardless of no one was obviously shot at or injured, it's still a traumatic incident for the one employee, so hearts go out to them.
I mean, you're fine, though, right?
Why do you want to question every story
today? Everything today. I'm just in one of those... I don't question this. Obviously, it happened. But is it not weird that they don't know the gender of what they did not carry? Men carry themselves a certain way. Women tend to have body parts that are identifiable.
Imagine them getting in trouble for misgendering the criminal.
And
then,
criminal
comes out pressing charges.
I did a Jason Tells the Future maybe 2 years ago. This is before you started. Where we started to go down this pathway of having gender X on your license as a means to not identify a gender. You just don't, you're either non-binary or, you know, whatever you're choosing. You're just choosing not to identify with male or female. And I said there's going to be a time in which there's like some kind of high-speed chase and the cop's going to say a male driver and it turns out to be gender X. And that cop is going to get in trouble.
I have that one on my list. During the break, I'll look and see what day you
I
you
did say that,
yeah,
right? Okay,
yeah, it's on the list.
I definitely said that. I guarantee you that's going to happen. Keith Swank is running for Congress in Washington's 8th District. A whole bunch of people who are listening to me right now get a say in that election. He's running up against another Republican who will be on the show later. When we come back, Keith Swank makes the case. Ranch on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM for our friends on the Greater East Side. Tomorrow, Washington's 8th Congressional District gets to pick the Republican challenger to take on Dr. Kim Schreier, a Seattle-style progressive in what should be a red district. Washington 8 encompasses a ton of land from Sammamish, Maple Valley, Auburn, and Bonnie Lake over to Cleellum, Ellensburg, Wenatchee, and Chelan. One of the candidates is Keith Swank, and he joins me now. Keith, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me. And by the way, you've been doing a great job on Tucker Carlson.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm the best.
Yeah, you are.
So you've got a military background. You've got a law enforcement background. We've seen general lawlessness that's been going unaddressed both here in the Pacific Northwest, but really across the country. I don't think Kim Schreier said anything condemning the violence, certainly nothing meaningful. So what say you?
I say this year's election is an election for law and order or anarchy. And people that are voting out there need to vote for politicians or representatives that stand for law and order. And what's going on in our country right now, I've been a cop for 30 years. I have never seen anything like it. It's complete destruction throughout major cities throughout the United States. And mostly all those cities have been led by Democrats for decades.
How do you connect it to Washington 8? When you've got something going on in Seattle or Portland and Chicago, I think it's very easy for someone who's living, say, in Buckley to say, oh, well, this isn't going to come to my neighborhood.
I can just use the analogy of homelessness. Homelessness is spread throughout all communities, even small ones throughout the United States and especially throughout Washington State. This lawlessness is going on throughout the country. It's going on in smaller towns. It's spreading all over the place. And the Black Lives Matter movement incorporated is helping to sponsor that along with anarchists.
Would you, I'm assuming you would have not signed on to this letter like the Democratic congressional delegation did, condemning the use of federal law enforcement officials in the area. But given that you're a constitutional conservative, how do your values and beliefs play into federal intervention on what would normally be seen as a local issue?
Well, here's the situation with that. There's over 9,000 federal buildings throughout America. And if the cities that house those buildings aren't protecting them, then it's the federal government's job to do so. I have never seen that happen before in my 30 years as a police officer. Most agencies would just protect any buildings, federal or not, within their cities. And now we're seeing them saying they're not going to protect them. And anarchists are going in and trying to destroy them. So what can we do except for send federal officers in there? And these are uniformed officers, just the same as police officers are. They have the same arrest authority and everything like that, too.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Keith Swank. His website, by the way, KeithSwankForAmerica.com, spelled all out. KeithSwankForAmerica.com. He's one of the Republicans running in the 8th Congressional District trying to take on Dr. Kim Schreier. But obviously, first, you got to get past Jesse Jensen, who is also a Republican running. There are a lot of similarities between the two of you, including both of you served in the military. You both grew up in rural America, both obviously conservative. Why would you be the better choice?
Well, there's lots of reasons why, but first and foremost is I've been involved in Washington politics for decades. Jesse Jensen just moved into the area to run in this race. Secondly, I support President Trump, and in 2016, Jesse voted for the ghost of Teddy Roosevelt. So to say that he supports Trump is suspicious. And he has the backing of the swamp from Washington, D.C. He's raised more money than our campaign, but it comes from big donors outside the district. Most of our donors are from within the district, grassroots campaign people who are behind this campaign. And so I've been involved. I've worked on campaigns, initiative processes, all kinds of things. I even worked on a campaign whenever the state chairman, Caleb Heimlich, ran for state representative. So I've been involved in Washington state politics, been working hard, and I've been preparing myself my whole entire adult life for this, from wearing a uniform, defending America and our communities. And I will go to Washington, D.C. and defend your values in there.
You do make it sound a little bit like you're calling Jesse Jensen a carpetbagger, though, this idea that he just moved in for the opportunity. And to that point, I mean, on your website, you point out that when people ask you whether or not you're qualified, you simply point to the qualifications as outlined in the Constitution. You say, that's why I'm qualified. Is it fair to say someone just moved into the area without really having regard for the work that would be done? I mean, in theory, he could have moved to a lot of areas that probably would be a little bit easier to unseat a Democrat.
I don't know if it could move in an area that would be easier. He lived in the area. But what I'm saying is, and you're right, Constitution says what your qualifications are, but you're asking me to separate myself between me and Jesse Jensen. And, hey, look, I'm running against him in this primary, just like I am against Kim Schreier, right? So I'm just telling the difference so the voters know what's going on out there. Look, you can move into any place you want to and run. That's constitutionally fine. But whenever you think about it and examine it, people can come to the opinion of maybe somebody just moved in there as an opportunity and not because the best interests of the state or the country was at heart.
What should the new COVID relief bill look like? There are negotiations going on right now. We don't know exactly where it's going to come as far as unemployment benefits, but obviously there's more to that.
Okay, first off, my opinion is the government should have never shut down businesses throughout America. We're masked up more than ever now. It's still running its course. It's going to run its course. But with that being said, since the federal government shut down businesses and essentially laid people off, then it's their responsibility to provide the means for them to continue on paying their rent, buying food, and things like that. My personal opinion is the whole United States should be open immediately. This is just the flu. If you're scared of it and you're worried about it, then you can stay home and quarantine yourself. The rest of us that are being made to stay home and quarantine ourselves are basically on house arrest. Some of the things they haven't looked at is how much domestic violence has increased, suicides, all those things going on, sexual assault from families where children are locked out of going to school and stuck at home in dysfunctional families. So my personal opinion is open up immediately and let's get this economy going again. And if you are scared, stay home. I'm not scared of it. Many people aren't scared of it. To me, it's just the flu.
Is that fair, though, to call it just the flu? Because I'm with you in the idea of we got to stress personal responsibility. You can reopen the economy safely and responsibly. But to call it just the flu, number one, the flu has a vaccine and the coronavirus does not. And we know that the coronavirus has, as of right now, a slightly higher than the flu death rate. Now, ultimately, it may be exactly the same. And certainly a year from now, hopefully with a vaccine that works, we'll be saying it's exactly the flu. But is that a little bit dismissive of something where we don't have, and certainly at the beginning, we didn't have good enough treatment?
Well, I guess that some of us can disagree upon that.
Yeah.
Look, the numbers aren't correct. I remember Governor Cuomo saying they added 3,000 people to the death toll and said, we're not sure if this is coronavirus, but we're assuming it is.
The numbers are insane. And from Governor Jay Inslee here, I mean, just, 2.5 months ago, this whole idea that if you were to die from a gunshot and you had coronavirus at the time, they would list that as a coronavirus. That's nonsense. Pushing that aside just for a moment, just the idea of the coronavirus itself, it's very clearly different than the flu. Long term, it may be exactly the same as far as the data on the ground. But right now, could we at least acknowledge that there's not a vaccine that is available? And that's a huge difference between the flu and coronavirus.
I could acknowledge it's not a vaccine, but what I can acknowledge is that I'm completely confident that the science that's being told to us is true and that it's something worse than that. The way we're treating this is like it's Ebola in the air. We are shutting down everything. Everybody's wearing masks in Washington State, and yet the coronavirus cases are increasing. I'm telling you, masks don't work, because I put a tweet out the other day and said, put on your favorite mask, go in the kitchen and cook some food. If you can smell it, then you know that it's not stopping a virus from coming through the air. So this is just, I don't know what's going on here, but to be insisting people wear a mask, I'm saying you should wear a mask if you want to. If you don't want to, don't wear one. I'm for freedom, Jason. Freedom for people to make those decisions on their own.
Do you, what's your decision? Do you wear a mask? Is your family?
Well, since I am still employed as a police officer, I have to wear a mask because I'm not allowed to violate the law. I don't agree with it personally, though.
Okay, so if you were in a position where you weren't forced to do it, you would not be making that choice to wear the mask unless perhaps you were in the middle of a crazy huge crowd and you knew everybody had COVID.
I wouldn't wear the mask either way. I'm not worried about COVID. I'd rather just get it and get over with it so that I build up antibodies and not get it again. We need herd immunity from this stuff.
The website, KeithSwankForAmerica.com. It's all spelled out, KeithSwankForAmerica.com. He's running in the 8th Congressional District against Jesse Jensen. He's hoping to make it tomorrow into the general election so he can take on Dr. Kim Schreier, who's a doctor, by the way, in case you didn't realize it. She just sort of shoehorns it into every single comment that she makes. Keith Swank, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Jason, thank you so much. And thank all you voters out there. Remember, tomorrow is the time we have to have our ballots in by. Vote Keith Swank for America. Thank you so much. God bless you, and God bless America.
God bless you as well. KeithSwankForAmerica.com. Later on in the show, about an hour from now, we're going to also talk with Jesse Jensen to keep things fair. But again, that was Keith Swank. KeithSwankForAmerica.com. We've got another hour coming up right after this.